Welcome to the New Reality Show, where you can call in live for laser coaching and engage in Q&A with Drs. Art Emmerich and Christina Winzi. Discover how to master the power of your mind, body, and spiritual energies. Get empowered to create your new reality for more happiness, well-being, and success. Well, hello, hello, hello. How are you, Dr. Art?
Good. How are you, Dr. Chris?
Quite well, quite well. I'm very excited about this show. Welcome to our audience. This is the New Reality Show, and thank you so much for tuning in. We have a really, really special guest tonight, TED Talk speaker and international best-selling author, host of her own radio show, Jackie Simmons, is going to be sharing about teen suicide prevention, a very important topic. Before we bring her on, I just want to kind of orient anybody that's new to the show, Dr. Art, and we are two people that have been helping others for a very, very long time with our respective professions. And we came together, we were great friends to begin with, but we came together because we wanted to help a lot more people. And there's only so much we could do in our offices one-on-one or even online one-on-one. And so we created the show because we felt that there was so much stress and so much anxiety, and especially this past 2 years, that we wanted to be able to help a lot more people with free downloads. And but just the show itself, we provide as much solutions, as many solutions as possible for various topics. And then we bring on really special authors and speakers like we have tonight. So Dr. Art, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, I guess just to say that you can go to a lot of places and get a lot of theory and a lot of guessing about things. What we wanted to do was to take the theory, translate it into practices that we could give the listeners, so that if we have a topic, you should go away at the end of the evening with at least three or four things that you can actually do to improve your life and around the area of that particular topic. So that's our intention. We want to help make the world a little bit kinder, gentler place to live.
Absolutely. And I do want to thank our subscribers. We have some very loyal subscribers, and we appreciate anyone who chooses to subscribe to our show. And you can find that on our show page. There's a link to click to subscribe. And it can be as little as $2.99, but it does help us keep the lights on. If you get value out of the show and you want to be a regular audience, we love to have you, whether you're a subscriber or not. The other thing I want to say is that this is a call-in show. And especially with our guest tonight, if you have questions, if you have need, if there's someone you love who might be in danger, then we ask you to feel free to call in. And the numbers are 1-888-627-6008, and that's direct toll-free in the United States. And if you're outside the United States, it's 1-323-744-4831. So please feel free to get your questions ready, and we'll let you know when the phone lines are open. Meanwhile, we always start with Dr. Art's tip of the week, and I can't wait to hear what this one is.
Well, the tip of the week, I always pick a word to describe the tip. This one is on listening. So I've heard people say, well, I don't think anybody ever listens to me. They don't pay attention to me, whatever. So I want you to all know that there is someone who is always listening to you. Sometimes maybe you'd prefer that they didn't, but no way to turn it off. It's your unconscious mind. It's listening and watching and learning because it doesn't know the world the way you do. And there's actually a part of our conscious mind that blocks out a whole bunch of stuff that it deems as inaccurate, impossible, or false, or something like that. So there is a guardian up there. But whenever you speak, there's no filter. It goes right into your unconscious, and that's the way you build your identity. Certainly, when you were a young child, you did that because you didn't know who you were. You only knew who your parents told you were, your teachers or your minister, your friends or whatever. And so an accumulative record was made of all those statements, and the sum total of that was who you are. So if you now, as an adult, go around saying, oh, my knee is driving me crazy, your unconscious will say, I never knew that a knee could drive anybody crazy, but if that's what you want, I'll make a note of that, you know, that, or the shoulder is killing me. Well, I never knew a shoulder that killed anybody, but maybe so. I mean, you know, the master or the mistress has spoken, so I better make a note of that and just make sure I understand. So if you're going to make pronouncements, just remember that every single one of them goes directly into your unconscious as truth, because it would say, why would you lie to me? You know, if you don't believe that's true, why would you put it in there? So we have a kind of a presumption of truth. Maybe we don't deserve it a lot of times, but just be careful what you say, because your unconscious is always listening.
And so are your cells. It's not just your unconscious.
Including cells have all your 50 trillion cells are listening to.
Yes, absolutely. So watch what you say. I love that. That's great. Well, it's time to announce our speaker and our guest that we're going to talk to tonight. And Jackie is a TEDx speaker, radio show host, international best-selling author, creator of Conscious Retriggering, and co-founder of the Teen Suicide Prevention Society. Jackie Simmons is best known for her attitude-adjusting stories. So please join me as we interview Jackie Simmons. Jackie, are you with us?
I am. Yes. Thank you. It's so much fun to see you guys.
Yeah, Jackie, I haven't seen you in a long time. You got a new haircut since I've seen you.
I did. I got a new.
Yes. Yes.
It's called an attitude adjustment.
Good. I love it. And red is definitely your color, if I may say.
Oh, thank you.
So welcome to the show. I'm really excited to have you, and also because this is such a profound topic, and I know you're going to help a lot of people in this audience. So
thank you. I really appreciate being here, and I promise we're going to have a lot of fun, because while most people hesitate to talk about this, we took kind of a different take on it.
Good. Different take is good. Yes, absolutely. So where should we start, Art?
I don't know. I would wonder if Jackie has some things she'd like to just sort of put in the pot here and stir it around a little bit.
How about we do some myth busting?
Okay.
That's a great idea.
All right. So what do you believe about suicide and suicidal people? What's the first thing that you think of?
That they are extremely unhappy. So much so that they feel that there is no alternative but to kill themselves.
the I kind of go off that there are two things that would cause somebody to decide that suicide was smart. The one is a belief that they can no longer live the way things are, that it's impossible to continue living in that way. And maybe a lot of people feel that way, but until you add the second one, which is the absence of hope, and it takes the form of, and it ain't going to ever get any better. Mm-hmm. Now, once you put those two things together, it looks like we got a good candidate.
All right. What would you imagine if you were around someone who felt hopeless? What would you notice about them?
Physiology, I would think they would have pretty much of a victim's look, kind of head down, body posture, small and weak looking, I guess. Sad look on their face, that kind of thing.
I would take the opposite. I would think that they're putting on a brave face and pretending that everything's okay.
Interesting. Okay.
It's called masking. Mm-hmm. Congratulations, Dr. Chris. Ta-da!
Yay, you won the prize.
It's called masking. People struggling with suicide ideation and struggling with depression and any of these conditions that cause that slide. Because there's a really short slide from feeling helpless to feeling hopeless. And Dr. Art, you win a prize too, because you nailed it. It is not that people want to die. What we hear over and over again from attempt survivors, it's not that they wanted to die. It's that they couldn't imagine living another day. And the reason it's become such a challenge with teens is because, let's face it, part of their brain is missing. Their prefrontal cortex is not fully developed. And that's the part of the brain that holds the pause button. It holds perspective. And without perspective that what's happening now is not going to be what's happening next year in my life, without that perspective, hopelessness is more likely.
Wow. My understanding is that the brain it is fully, completely developed by 25. But there are different ages that are called teens. So are we talking that this develops at 16, 17, or?
Well, here's my understanding. Welcome to the world according to Jackie. We are going into neuroscience as Jackie understands it.
Okay.
The physiology is there, built out by the age of 12. And at the age of 12, most kids understand sarcasm. So that's the beginnings of an active prefrontal cortex. Not saying it's healthy. I'm just saying it's there. Mm-hmm. The challenge is that how much of it develops when between the ages of 12 and 25 is anybody's guess. It's individual. It depends on their whole nature, nurture, environment, and genes. I mean, it's, you talk about stirring something up. So the same thing is true for people at risk of suicide as it is for the development of a prefrontal cortex. Are you ready?
Yes.
You can't tell by looking.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't tell by looking at someone whether their prefrontal cortex is fully developed. It's impossible. Mm-hmm. And you can't tell by looking if somebody is struggling with suicidal ideation, if they're locked in what I call the negative echo chamber. Mm-hmm. We've created sort of our own lexicon of how to explain what's happening in the brain, because I couldn't find a program that focused where we wanted to focus. Every program we could find that was labeled suicide prevention was intervention. It kicked in only when someone was known to be at risk, they had a mental health diagnosis or a previous attempt, period. And the list of warning signs that you can find on suicide prevention websites, especially the one at the Center for Disease Control, the most guilt-producing document in the world.
Wow.
Nobody goes and looks at it unless their kid has already attempted. So it's only hindsight. And by the way, it wouldn't work anyway. Remember, this is neuroscience a la Jackie. Mm-hmm. The reticular activating system, the filter of the brain. Parents, there's a reason why you will not notice the signs until hindsight. It's because your reticular activating system is hardwired to believe that your kid's okay. You are hardwired. If you want to know just how challenging this is, you look in one of two sources. You can look in any book on good scientific research method. You will find something called confirmation bias. It impacts every medical field, every scientific field out there. The opinions, the belief system of a scientist will impact the results of an experiment.
Yes.
When it comes to human relationships, you can't tell by looking. Malcolm Gladwell wrote a book called Talking to Strangers, and he calls it truth bias. They took computers and did random numbers, and the random numbers were better at telling whether or not someone was lying than a court judge looking at a defendant. We are hardwired to believe what people present to us, to believe what they tell us. And that's why you can't tell by looking. So quit looking. At the Teen Suicide Prevention Society, we say looking for signs, waiting for trouble. The five saddest words in the world I hear all too often. And it's, we didn't see it coming. And I hear it all the time.
So where
does that leave a parent then? If you can't see it, do you suspect that your teen is suicidal all the time and then do the remedial things to keep them from ever getting there?
No. Remedial, no. How about proactive, pure prevention? How about something that's a lot more fun?
Good.
Would you like to see how it works?
Yeah.
Absolutely. We're here to learn from you.
All right, here we go. You go to your kid and you say, hey, I decided to be part of the mission to make teen suicide a thing of the past. They gave me a guide. I need to practice. Would you have a few minutes to help me practice my guide?
Oh my gosh.
That's brilliant. Having the talk.
Okay. That's the talk.
This is how you get you know what happens when you tell a kid, we need to talk. It's sort of like telling your partner, we need to talk.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
This bypasses that natural shutdown, the eye roll and the brain turns off that happens when you talk to a teen. Now, this is not where we started. This is where we are. We started with, the talk. I did this great. You're going to laugh. Okay. You want to talk about myth busting? Here we go. I put together a public service announcement. You remember public service announcements?
Oh, yeah.
This is your brain as they held up an egg. This is your brain.
Yes.
They also had one about teen sex. And it was two parents talking to a kid. And they were saying, honey, nobody's saying sex is bad. But at 13, it will kill your dreams. And public service announcements worked back then. They worked because we were all around one screen as a family and we were all seeing this message and it could spark a conversation.
Right.
We're not all around one screen at all anymore. So a public service announcement, I thought, okay, all you social media, we'll get to everybody. So here was my great idea. I was so proud of this. It had music and it had drama and the things that went across it were like, Mom, Dad, your teen is at risk. Would you wait to talk to your teen about sex until after they were pregnant? Do you wait to talk to your teen about drugs till after they're in rehab? Or wait to talk to them about alcohol until they've lost their license for drunk driving? Are you waiting to talk with your kid about suicide? Bum, 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 bum. I was so sure that this would catch on. And I got crickets.
Wow.
Here's what I realized. Parents aren't talking to their teens about sex, drugs, and alcohol, and I need them to talk about suicide. What was I thinking? So we figured out a way to get around that whole talk problem and the assumption that you only have the talk if you think they're at risk. Right. So the first myth is that you wait until there's a sign. The answer is no. The truth, the reality, stop arguing with the reality. We live in a day and an age where often the first sign is an attempt and they don't all survive.
Mm-hmm.
So we created the way around that. Now, I got an idea. Instead of me talking about the talk, why don't I practice it with the two of you? Are you up for that?
Absolutely. This is, we are here to just, you go, girl.
All right, here we go.
Let me just take one brief station break. I don't mean to spoil your energy.
Oh, this is perfect. No, okay. No, no. Hang on, guys. It gets more interesting from here.
Absolutely. You're listening to the New Reality Show with Dr. Chris Winsey, which is me, and Dr. Art Emmerich, and our amazing guest, TED Talk speaker, international best-selling author, and so many other things, Jackie, I can't count. Co-founder of the Teen Suicide Prevention Society. So we are just thrilled to have you. And I did want to just say that, folks, you can call in and ask questions, even though we're in the midst of doing what Jackie has cooked up for us to try the thing you do with parents with us. But if you want to call in and talk with us or ask us a question, it's 1-888-627-6008, toll free in the U.S. And if you want to dial direct from outside the U.S., it's 1-323-744-4831. Okay, Jackie, we're ready to go. Do it.
We're ready.
All right. Dr. Chris, Dr. Art, thank you for helping me practice my guide. It's only four questions. Are you ready?
Yes.
Ready.
All right. I'm going to ask it first to Dr. Chris, then to Dr. Art with this one. Question one, have you heard about the rise in teen suicides?
I actually have heard about the rise because of the last 2 years and all the lockdowns. Yes.
Thank you.
Dr. Art? I have heard about it, not confined to teen suicide, but just in general, more so with veterans, the daily suicide rate being so high now, 20-something a day, and just atrocious numbers. And I assume that that's reflected in other groups also.
Thank you. Question two, I'll ask Dr. Art first. Hey, Art, do you have a story? Do you have a friend who's tried or died?
I do not, no.
Thank you. Dr. Chris, do you have a friend who's tried or died?
I don't. I have someone who I recently learned tried to topple her car, actually, after a very, very bad week. So actually, I do. Yeah.
Thank you. Question three, Dr. Chris first. Have you ever thought of leaving that way?
I have, yes, in the past, a long time ago.
Dr. Art, have you ever thought of leaving that way?
No, I have not.
Thank you. Question four. Dr. Art, why stay? Today, what are your reasons for staying?
Today?
Mm-hmm.
I have this enormous curiosity about what's going to happen next. I'm prepared to go whenever the time comes, because I've put in for a special job in my next life. I don't know if I'll get selected or not, but anyway, so that's already set up. I've already got a place waiting, but I really want to stay here because I have a lot of unfinished business here. So I want to stay and keep it rolling.
Dr. Chris, today, why stay? What are your reasons for staying?
I absolutely love my life. I love life itself. I am on the edge of my seat watching changes in our world, even though we're going through a very rough time in humanity. I just believe we're on the verge of all kinds of amazing things that are going to happen, and I want to be here to see it. And most importantly, I want to be here to help people through whatever transformations they need to go through as we evolve as a society.
Another way to ask this question: what's so good about your life that you want more of it?
That's awesome.
When someone helps practice the God, and I'm just going to explain what just happened in your brain, because anybody watching or listening, when you started tapping into your reasons for staying, there was a physiological shift. And here's what happened in your brain. All of the electrical energy that was engaged in the conversation about suicide got pulled away and put into a new neural pathway. It's like the file cabinet in your brain got a new file folder, and that file folder is labeled reasons for staying. So you just started reprogramming your reticular activating system. So now if you have a thought of leaving, it's going to bump up against your file of reasons for staying, and it's less likely to stick around. So that's the power of the talk that stops suicidal thoughts from getting stuck in your head. And parents, we got your back on this. Inside that simple script is a tripwire that alerts you when intervention is needed. If someone answers yes to question three, they've had thoughts of leaving. And when you ask, what are your reasons for staying? They have nothing. And when you ask, what's so good about your life today that you want more of it? They have nothing. Thoughts of leaving, zero reasons for staying. Our rule: stay with them and dial 911. They might hate you for it, and you might save their life. So the tripwire is built in. Now, what's really interesting is out of all of these talks that we've been doing, because we've been at this for a while now, the number of times that that wire's been tripped, zero. Zero. And here's why. Masking. If someone is struggling with suicidal ideation and they tell you they have all these reasons for staying, they're going to lie.
Yes.
They're going to lie. And you know what happens when they do? Their brain hears themselves, what Dr. Art said in his tip. Their brain hears them answer the question, what are your reasons for staying? And it starts building out a file folder labeled reasons for staying in their brain. You're helping them build a buffer between them and an edge, even if they lie. So you can't screw this up. You cannot do this wrong, parents. You can only choose not to do it. And that, we believe, is a mistake. The talk is super simple. We give it away, a full training around it and the guide on the Teen Suicide Prevention Society website. It's easy to get to, talksthatsavelives.com. We will send it to anyone 13 years of age or older. Caveat, 13 to 18. A responsible adult must also fill out the application.
Gotcha.
Otherwise, we're out to suicide-proof the world. When I'm talking to adults, it's, hey, suicide-proof yourself first. Put your own oxygen mask on first. Take care of yourself. And then start suicide proofing the people around you. We want every person to practice this talk with 20 other people. And the reason it's 20, the power of 20, when one person takes their own life, they on average massively impact 20 people. Mm. We want to tip that scale. Yeah. We want everyone to make a list of who are the 20 people you would miss the most if they took themselves out today. And those are the people you call and you issue the invitation. You invite them to the talk for the next day. This talk is always pre-planned. It's always consent-based, permission-based. It's always an open book. We never blindside anybody with the talk, the way that my parents tried to blindside me with it growing up. You know, it's always open. Mm-hmm. And they always say, yes, I'll help you. And the reason they all say yes is because we tapped into that part of the brain. You ever seen a two-year-old when you ask them if they'll help you do something? Oh, I get to help. I get to help.
Yeah.
There's no difference in that wiring in your brain. When you ask someone to help, you're giving them a chance to have a dopamine hit. What is that doing? Building a buffer between them and an edge. You don't even have to know if they're near. Oh, and we did kind of sneak everybody in on something. So the other thing that happens and why we love to get teens doing the talks is something called mirror neurons. Mm. When I hear you give your reasons for staying, my brain starts mirroring that, filling out this folder. Oh, that's my reason for staying too. Or no, that's a new one. And I have this one. And that cannot be helped. It's how our brains work. So Dr. Chris, Dr. Art, I just want to say thank you because every single person listening to the two of you answer the questions just built out a buffer between them and an edge.
How did you come up with these four questions? This is brilliant. Did you start with that or did you evolve into it or what?
When we first started, we published a little book. The idea was to get teens to break the silence because we learned that silence is not golden when it comes to suicide. Silence is deadly. As a matter of fact, not being willing to talk about suicide with my middle daughter, Stephanie, almost cost me her life. Now, I knew my daughter had an issue. I had survived her first suicide attempt at the age of 14. I got her professional help. We did it all, counseling, therapy, interventions, medications, hospitalizations. And she survived 13 more attempts.
Wow.
And I had convinced myself, I sold myself on the idea that as long as she was getting professional help, we didn't need to talk about it.
Mm.
I didn't want to talk about it. I mean, would you want to know what could cause your child so much mental and emotional pain that they thought dying was better than living?
It's very, very difficult for a parent to even consider that is the possibility.
Just to own any part of that would be hard. Yeah.
Yeah.
For me, it was impossible. So I stayed silent. And that silence lasted 23 years. Mm. And then on August the 3rd, 2019, my daughter Stephanie, then 37, broke the silence. If she had done it any way other than the way she did it, I probably could have found a way to ignore it. You know, that reticular activating system is really powerful, but strong emotion will start to crack it open.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd love to tell you that story if we've got time.
Oh, absolutely. We are in rapt attention. I have other questions, but you go.
The day of Stephanie's talk was sunny and already warm. The conference room was on the outside of Sarasota, Florida. So this is August. It was already hot. I walked in and greeted the 12 speakers that I'd trained to deliver messages that matter. And everything worked. You'd love this. The videographer was there. The microphones worked. The slides worked. The audience started taking their seats, and Stephanie, she was getting into that nervous, excited state you get into right before you give a talk. Oh my God, Art, you've met Stephanie. She looked amazing in her dark blouse and flowery skirt, and her hair was pulled back in combs. I'm super proud of my daughter. She's first up on the speaker's roster, and the lights dim. And I'm like, all right, everybody help me welcome Stephanie Ashton. She walked confidently to the front of the room and shook my hand. And she started with over 3,000 teenagers will attempt to take their own lives today, just in the U.S. In the back of the room, I was stunned, actually shocked. First, because I had no idea the number was that high. And second, because I didn't know suicide was her topic. Then she said, when I was 14, after a bad day of shopping, I stood in my bathroom and the pain of not fitting into any clothes was just more proof that I didn't fit in anywhere. And that pain was more than I could bear. So I took a razor and cut into my left arm, trying to end the pain and my life. In the back of the room, my heart sank. I felt the blood just drain from my face. Have you ever been hijacked by a bad memory?
Oh, yes.
It took every bit of my 30 years of stress management training to keep me from just crawling into a corner and bawling my eyes out. Stephanie continued, it wasn't my only attempt. There were others. And I still struggle with suicidal thoughts. I went from pale to bone cold. It hit me like a ton of bricks, the struggles that Stephanie had faced alone because I hadn't had the courage to have the talk about suicide. Stephanie wound up her talk. Along my suicide avoidant journey, I've learned tons of coping skills. Now I want to teach those skills to teens before they need them. Mm-hmm. Yes, before they need them. Oh my God, there was not a dry eye in the house, including mine. Everybody gave her a standing ovation. People were rushing up and hugging her and thanking her for being so brave, so vulnerable, so willing. In the back of the room, I was frozen, totally torn between pride for her bravery and guilt and shame for my cowardice. And then it hit me. 3,000 teens attempt to take their own lives every day. That means every day, over 6,000 parents start to live the guilt nightmare that I'd lived. Mm-hmm. And that means over 20,000 grandparents, aunts, uncles, brothers, and sisters, and hundreds of thousands of classmates, teachers, boyfriends, girlfriends, neighbors, all start to live the guilt nightmare and probably all just as blindsided by it as I had been. And then I wondered, what if Stephanie was right? What if the key to stopping teen suicide was as simple as having the talk before you think they need it, before your teen starts struggling with suicidal thinking? It is something so simple and so obvious that we've tripped over it. You know, simple and obvious, like putting wheels on luggage, yeah, or putting ketchup in bottles that squeeze. Yeah, simple and obvious. So that's how we got started with this idea of what if we could break the silence before they get stuck in a negative echo chamber. And we get stuck easily, especially on this topic. And the reasons we get stuck, the reasons people don't break the silence on their own struggles with suicidal thinking, oh, we have a list. The reason number one, I don't want to be a burden on my family. Reason number two, I don't want my family to worry about me. Reason number three, I don't want someone to think I need to see someone. Reason number four, and this is a biggie. Teens know what happens. Teens know their friends who at 15 are taken out of counselors' offices in handcuffs and put in 72-hour psychiatric holds. Teens know about suicide. It's the parents that are clueless. And so your teen is not going to volunteer to tell you for all of those reasons and probably a million more. So what do? They have a thought. It's uncomfortable, but it goes because thoughts come and go. Suicidal thoughts are actually normal. According to Freud, they're part of your natural negative bias, your worst case scenario problem solving mechanism. But if the thought comes back and you've got anything going on like Stephanie did about thinking she didn't fit in anywhere, now you've got Velcro. And so that thought gets hooked. And if you've got all of those reasons, all of those stigma-based scenarios in your brain, you're not going to tell anybody. So what do? Try not to think about it. You ever tried not to think about something? I mean, if I said, don't think about an elephant.
Yeah. You know? Right. Right.
So now you're thinking about not being here anymore. You're trying not to think about not being anymore. So now you're thinking about not being here anymore. And we call that doubling down on a thought. If you've ever been to Vegas, you know what doubling down is. Okay. The stakes go up as the emotions go up. Mm-hmm. And so we call this a negative echo chamber. And our subconscious minds are incredibly elegantly designed to bring about what we think about as Dr. Art is very fond of saying. So what you have now is your subconscious mind doing what it does when it thinks something is important to you, because that's what you're thinking about. So it's creating plans and looking for opportunities. This is the law of attraction in action. Mm-hmm. With a teen brain, with no pause button, all it takes is subconscious plan to cross opportunity and they're gone. And the ones who survive wake up in emergency rooms and go, I don't know what happened. Because it was not a conscious choice. This is the legacy of the caveman, where the brain blood pulls into the limbic brain, pulls into the brain stem to protect a caveman in a fight or flight stress scenario, protects them from bleeding from a head injury. Kind of common when you're wrestling with saber-toothed tigers. Not so common for us today, but the impact is even more deadly because while it saved a caveman's life, it pulls the blood from the higher functioning regions of the brain. And so there is no rational thought happening. Matter of fact, there's really not any thought happening when that combination is present.
And so
there's no intervention there.
So when the thought is happening, are they, I'm imagining that they're in a lot of pain emotionally. Mm-hmm. So that gives them the reason. Is that they just want the pain to stop. And you're saying, and then this whole caveman brain.
Yeah, the whole caveman brain kicks in. And what's happened is that they've been thinking about not thinking about it. They've been in the negative echo chamber.
Gotcha.
So the subconscious made a plan, looked for an opportunity. It's not conscious. There are two reasons we take action. One is because we're hijacked by our amygdala, which is what Dr. Art was very fond of talking about back when we were meeting every month.
Right.
The other is this moment where it seems like the best idea at the time. To speak to our beginning of our conversation, Dr. Art, they don't see that it's going to get any better. So it seems like the only option. What we've learned at the Teen Suicide Prevention Society and through all of the interviews I've done on the Suicide Prevention Show is the deadliest thing that you can do is the one thing that parents want to do more than anything else in the world, which is take suicide off the table as an option. They want the kid to write a safety contract. They want the kid to promise that they won't harm themselves. I wanted that promise from Stephanie the night she first attempted. Her written, handwritten note that she would not try to harm herself while I slept did zero to help me sleep that night.
Well, and in the hypnosis and NLP community, we have some understandings about what the purpose and functions are of the conscious and the unconscious. And the unconscious is the mind of the body. Mm-hmm. It runs all the systems. It keeps everything healthy and working. And so for a long time, we thought, well, that would be enough to override any thoughts of suicide, because that would be the ultimate insult to the, you know, to the survival. Mm-hmm. And what we found out over time is you can say the unconscious cares a whole lot about your body and preserving it and keeping it in good health. But it only cares about it if you do. Mm-hmm. As soon as you don't care about that anymore, the unconscious doesn't care about it either. Otherwise, there would be no suicides. You know, it would just override every attempt or every thought about it and say, no, you can't do that. I'm in charge of taking care of you, and I won't let you have that thought. Well, it doesn't work that way. You can override that. If you are intent on doing this thing and you keep the repetition up and looking for opportunities and times and ways and all that kind of stuff, pretty soon your unconscious gets in there and says, yeah, okay, we're going to do this. Let's do a good job of it, you know, and it will actually help out. And we'd never realized that that was even possible for a long time.
And I'm going to myth bust something you said. You had in your list a conscious plan. And what we've learned from talking to people who have survived attempts, they didn't have a conscious plan.
Didn't have it.
They didn't even get that far as having a conscious exit strategy. All that took was an opportunity and something that amped up the pain. For Stephanie, when she was 14, it was the day we went shopping for her summer trip to visit her dad and her family, his family, one state away. It was June of 1995. Stephanie was 14, in between her sisters, in between schools, and in between clothing sizes. So the shopping became an adventure.
Yeah.
Oh my God, outfit after outfit. You want to talk about pain? You take a teenage girl, outfit after outfit, store after store, to come home with nothing but an attitude. Mm-hmm. Anybody who's ever seen a 14-year-old girl with an attitude knows. We got in the house and she headed straight upstairs. And I collapsed on the sofa, grateful to be off my feet. A few minutes of peace and quiet. Mm-hmm. And then, Mom, I think I need help. And my eyes were drawn to Stephanie's left arm. Blood was dripping down her fingers and onto the wood floor. The emotional part of my brain started screaming in terror at the sight of my bleeding, obviously suicidal child. The rational part of my brain, you want to talk about a split brain, was flipping through the files in my head looking for the date of her last tetanus shot.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
You ever been panicked and calm at the same time?
Yes.
Anybody who says you can't have two emotions at the same time, I will argue with. Because that moment, I had two. I wrapped her in my arms, assessed the wounds. They weren't life-threatening. So we bandaged her up and made plans the next day to go to the local teen mental health facility. And that night, with her, I couldn't bear to be away from her. I mean, after all the tears stopped and the mutual I'm sorry's got shared, she slept and I couldn't be away from her. So we were sleeping in the living room. Mm-hmm. And her handwritten note was between us. And all night I listened to her breathe and stared into the darkness. And my brain just swung. You know, what just happened? How did this happen? Mm-hmm. And who's to blame? It had to be somebody's fault, right? And what followed was the marathon of counseling, therapy, medications, interventions, and hospitalizations. Mm-hmm. One of the biggest myths that kept me silent, more people believe than not, even though there's a lot of evidence and a lot of articles about it, I was afraid to put the idea in her head. Mm. You'd think after 14 attempts, I'd have figured out that it was there. But that reticular activating system is really strong.
Yeah.
We believe what we believe. And it takes a lot of evidence contrary. And besides, she was getting professional help. And I have run across article after article, video after video from parents whose children had severe mental health challenges. They were in with professionals, and at no time did the professional mention to the parent or the patient that there was a risk of suicide.
Wow. That's frightening.
And practitioners, I think, have that same myth, that they're scared to bring it up with their patients because they don't know how to talk about it. Mm-hmm. I interviewed the director of the Suicide Institute in New York City. His job, he goes in and teaches clinicians how to talk about suicide with their patients. Because if you wait until the patient brings it up, they're not going to, and it's too late.
Right.
And practitioners and clinicians are not taught how to have the talk. They're not taught how to bring it up in a healthy way, in a safe way. You know, we put so many guardrails around this conversation to make it totally safe for both people in it. Mm-hmm. If a parent's freaking out, all they have to do is look down and read, because you read the guide verbatim every time, just like reading somebody their Miranda rights. You know, the cop has to have the paper in his hand. He's not mm-hmm. allowed to do it from memory. Parents are not allowed. No one is allowed. We call our experts advocates. You know, nobody, no talker is allowed to have the talk without reading the guide. Why? Because this gives you some place to look. So you're not eyeball to eyeball.
Right. Absolutely.
Is there a way to use this for adults?
Absolutely.
Would this work the same way?
It works exactly the same way.
Okay. I just want to caution, we have only a couple of minutes left, and I want to make sure that we put up on the screen the freebies that you are offering to people to help them. Right. So, Thomas, can you put on the screen the links that, Jackie, do you want to speak about these?
Oh, thank you so much. Hi, Thomas. All right. So I'm going to start at the bottom. And the last one, talksthatsavelives.com. That's where people can get these guide and the training around the guide for free. That's where you go and apply. We believe in putting your own oxygen mask on first. So the one in the middle is a know, like, and trust yourself assessment. You get to find out what your KLT factor is, your know, like, and trust factor, and how to improve it. When you know, like, and trust yourself, I don't have to worry about you falling off an edge. And the top one, drama dial downs. This is my gift for the holidays for everyone. And there's always a holiday coming. So no matter when you're listening to this, this is the four flavors of emotional energy, how to push your own buttons. It's a 2-hour masterclass. It's completely free. And in those 2 hours, every single person will create, you'll create for yourself, muscle memory, fingertip control, your buttons for the four positive, powerful states of emotion. So you can dial down your drama or amp up your confidence whenever you want.
Wonderful. Those are fabulous gifts, and I hope that a lot of people take advantage of them. I think we have run out of time. And is there, do you have, other than these websites, is there JackieSimmons.com?
For this conversation, it's TeenSuicidePreventionSociety.com. And we're always upgrading it, always adding partners, always adding new mental and emotional fitness programs.
Okay.
So join the society. We imagine a world where teen suicide is a thing of the past.
How awesome. How awesome. I can't thank you enough for being with us and spending this this time just flew by.
Boy, it has just been zooming by. I can't believe we're already out of time.
Zooming by on Zoom. So, Jackie, thank you so much. And folks, please, please take advantage of these gifts. And let's all have the talk that saves lives with 20 people. Right, Jackie? 20 people.
20 people.
20 people. That's our show for tonight. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Jackie. This is just the work you've been doing since I saw you last is just absolutely mind-boggling. Congratulations.
Thank you, Art. Thank you, Dr. Chris.
Thanks for joining us. If you've enjoyed this show, please consider being a supporter. You can find that on our show page. Tune in every Friday night at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, and find us on Facebook at facebook.com/New Reality Show for announcements of upcoming topics and exciting guest interviews. Bye for now.